The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. You're listening to Omira and Borgeson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to the Omira and Borgeson Show.
I'm Kelly Omira.
And I'm Christina Borgeson. 5 days ago, on September 29th, the Federal Reserve Board announced that six of the nation's largest banks would, quote, participate in a pilot climate scenario analysis exercise designed to enhance the ability of supervisors and firms to measure and manage climate-related financial risks. The pilot exercise will be launched in 2023. And the board is going to publish the details of the climate, economic, and financial variables that make up the climate scenario narratives. The exercise will go on until the end of the year. It is, quote, exploratory in nature and does not have capital consequences. The participating banks are Bank of America, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, and Wells Fargo. When virtually all the key players responsible for the crash of 2008, the players that caused that huge sucking sound of American taxpayer money being funneled into their pockets via bailouts after they'd already ripped everyone off, when these same players get together for a so-called exercise, I think we need to pay attention. And since no one understands the Federal Reserve Board and big bank shenanigans like Catherine Austin Fitz of Solari Investment Advisory Services, she's back today to talk about what this might really mean. So, Catherine, talk about Christina. What they're making this.
So let me give some context, because it's really important to understand the context. You know, because I want to put you in the shoes of the chairman of the Federal Reserve System and what you would do. In 2018, the German finance minister said at the Shanghai meeting that the debt growth model was over. There were no options left that weren't real choices and real solutions. What that means is we've been growing debt explosively for many decades. I know both of you understand that. Kelly in particular has followed this. We just closed the federal fiscal year on September 30. The new fiscal year starts on October 1st. There's now $31 trillion officially on the balance sheet of debt outstanding. I would say the number is probably much larger for the debt that is not on the balance sheet. But still, $31 trillion is a lot. And over the last year, it went up $2.5 trillion. Now, what that means is the Fed has two ways out of the current situation. If they continue to inject more money, quantitative easing, and give it to their pals, they're just going to get more inflation. The other choice they have is to throw the economy into recession, which they've been doing by steadily increasing interest rates. But if you look at the problems that's going to give both the government and the central bank in terms of controlling, they've got a real problem. So if they choose to go the inflation route and just monetize more and more debt for the government and continue to grow the debt, we're going to continue to see dramatic increases in food and energy and other prices that squeezes out the middle class. If they throw us into recession, creating unemployment and basically destroying demand, you're also going to have other control issues. Now, what does that mean? What that means is you need to implement more and more systems that give you more and more invasive control of people's bank accounts and lives. And climate change and ESG are the two perfect, you know, latest excuses to do that. Now, the question is, what are they simulating in this practice? I don't have the details on it, but my guess is they're simulating more controls that they can implement on your financial transactions, control where you go, what you do. So this is sort of in the evolution to CBDC. But there's something else, and that is, you know, and we've seen this with Hurricane Ian. When you have natural disasters, you have extraordinary opportunities to access money in the federal insurance accounts and funds on a very secretive and extraordinary basis. So, for example, if we wanted to juice the stock market since Friday, you know, having natural disasters like Hurricane Ian would give you access to potentially extraordinary funds in the FHA fund and the VA fund. So another thing that could be using the climate change for is practice on, you know, how to do extraordinary access to money and extraordinary interventions when you have these quote unquote natural disasters. So my guess is they're looking for implementing things on people's accounts like climate change, social credit scores, ESG, you know, implementing that on the retail side of the house, but also looking on how they do extraordinary secret manipulations when you have natural disasters. But of course, you know, the more detail we can all find on what they're up to in these simulations, the better. Because as we know, many of these simulations have a way of coming true.
And well, I would point out, that's right, exactly what went through my head.
The Fed just had a, you know, essentially an urgent secret meeting yesterday behind closed doors on October 3rd. And the only thing we saw come out of the Fed after that was an announcement on debit card transactions. I'm hoping to meet with some bankers shortly, so I'm going to see if that's part of implementing more, you know, individual controls on retail accounts. It's hard to tell. Anyway, so none of this is good for the average person. And, you know, as we've said many, many times, what we all need to do is back up the digital financial system. You know, the more we can use cash and the more we can decentralize our bank deposits into small, you know, credit unions, community banks. I'm encouraging many state legislators, for God's sakes, if you can, start a state bank. You know, get the New York Fed banks out of the state, you know, banking business, but then get a state bank that can really support the local credit unions and banks. There's a lot state legislators could do in this environment to really back this up. But we can all use cash. We can all decentralize our bank deposits. And frankly, we can take a lot of the money out of the banks and put it out on what I call the people bank. You know, the biggest investment I have is cash and money out there on the people bank. And, you know, that's my favorite bank.
What's the people bank? What's the people bank?
Well, I've told you the story when I ended up in a huge food fight litigating with the feds. I had given or lent $250,000 to family and friends. And so when an effort was made to freeze all my credit and all my income, the, you know, sort of my family and friends got together and said, well, I guess she needs it back. And that was the one. Over the next 11 years, people repaid or gifted me $250,000. I had a wonderful uncle who was very wealthy and who basically said, look, she helped everybody else, so I'm going to help her. And he could do it. And it was that $250,000 over that 11 years. Christine, if it hadn't been for that money, I would not be with us. You know, I would not have made it. And so it was interesting when I settled the litigation and I got a big settlement, my accountant said, because I'd had to bust my 401k and pay huge amounts of taxes to get that money to help pay for attorneys. My CPA said, oh, well, let's fund up the 401k. I said, I'm never putting money into anything in partnership with the federal government ever again. I am taking a chunk of the money that I would put in the 401k and I'm sending it back out on the people bank because the people bank saved my life. And so I'm putting it out back on the people bank. That's, you know, there's nothing more. I used to work for 10 years as an investment advisor, and there's nothing more depressing than seeing a wonderful family who's busy, you know, they're putting all their money into the national security state while their kids and grandkids are going short of the proper kind of education or investment, you know, or start that they deserve in life. So, you know, finance the people who are going to be there for you before you finance the national security state.
So Catherine, I have a question. So you were going over the national debt when you first started out, and you said we're at $31 trillion. I'm curious, that doesn't include the off-budget Medicare and Social Security, is that right?
No. So that doesn't include any of the off balance, you know, any of the liabilities that are off the direct balance sheet. And it also doesn't include the Treasury and other securities I believe they've issued secretly off balance sheet. So I think the number is much higher. And, you know, we've seen foreigners say that they're owed much more than we show on our, you know, there's a there's a black hole between what the investors say they're owed and what we say is outstanding. In 2017, so for many years, you and I tracked the missing money. Mm-hmm. And as of 2000, after the 2015 financials showed $6.5 trillion in undocumentable adjustments, I had the total undocumentable adjustments up to $12 trillion. You know, of course, that's all illegal transactions. Dr. Mark Skidmore heard me on a radio show saying that 6.5 trillion had been missing since 2000 or in the 2015 year. And he said, she has to be making a mistake. It can't possibly be that bad. So he went in and looked at the financials, realized it was, called me, and we decided he and his students would do a survey. And they finished and completed their survey. It's published at missingmoney.solari.com. Anyway, he published a survey on, and they found 21 trillion of missing undocumentable adjustments. And at that point, it was a magical number, because at that point in 2017, September 2017, the U.S. official debt was up to 21 trillion. So there was 21 trillion. So I'm going to grossly oversimplify to make a point. You issue 21 trillion of treasuries, then you steal the money out the back door, right? That's what those two numbers say. We issued $21 trillion and we disappeared the money out the back door. And so what that means is, since September 2017, the total debt has increased by approximately 50%.
Wow.
Which means we're going straight up the S curve. And that's why I said the Fed has to choose between hard choices now. Do they institute a recession, or do they inflate some more, do more QE and inflate out of here? And either option requires much more control of the general population and financial transactions. And one way or another, that is what climate change and ESG are being used to do. You know, it's essentially a Chinese social credit system.
Here's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, are you saying that these exercises are going to look at various climate change? It's got to be disasters, right?
So I'm not sure, because there's several possibilities here. One is to implement, you know, just like they're throwing the farmers off the land in the Netherlands, to yes. implement climate change regulations that give them much more control of real assets.
Or
much
can I,
more ability. Yeah, so go ahead, Kelly.
So, Catherine, so how I'm seeing this or understanding it is, let's say that a farmer in the Netherlands, blah, 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 you know, has a bad year. It's a dry year. You know, their crops didn't come in. So could these bankers go, well, you know, the risk with you, you know, you had a bad crop last year, the one before wasn't that great because of the climate, right? You weren't getting the rain that you needed. Is it something like that, that we can say, hey, you're not worth the risk?
No. So there are many possibilities of what could be going on, but understand what is happening with climate change regulation as opposed to response to disaster capitalism, because those are two things. But what is happening with climate change regulation is, you take a farmer who's got a solid, profitable business, and you change the rules related to nitrogen that cause them to have to sell off some or all of their cows, killing their source of income. And that restriction then reduces significantly the value of their land. And so they're better off selling their land. So you basically drive them out of business with regulations. Okay. So you dramatically reduce the size of their livestock. You know, meantime, you know, you're using your resources to build synthetic food plants, right?
Yeah. So
it's a way of using regulation to destroy the sources of animal protein in a way that make it much easier for the bankers to pick up that land cheap. It's a way of stealing land.
So this is the next ripoff here that they're talking about, really?
You're talking about a huge wave of lowering the value of people's real estate, whether it's with recession, or climate change regulations, and then being able to pick up that land cheap. So you're talking about moving people off. I mean, we could just drop an army in and force everybody off the land, right? That's the old timey way of doing it. Now what we do is we invent complex systems, say that we're saving the earth, and use it to destroy people's businesses and ultimately move them off the land. It's just a slower, more sophisticated way of taking control of all the land and doing it. You know, if you look at how they're doing it, they're essentially doing it by printing the money they need to buy the land. So we're back to two realities. We have one group of people who are operating behind sovereign immunity. So they're above the law. So the double standard is that they are not subject to the laws related to criminal behavior or racketeering. But also, if you look at how the central banking system is working, they have, you know, a 0% cost of capital at the end of the day, whereas the other group of people are subject to, you know, extraordinary amounts of law and regulation and have a much higher cost of capital. So if you've been a Federal Reserve Bank since 2008 or a top member of the New York Fed member bank, essentially your cost of capital is almost zero. If you're the average American, you know, your credit card interest rate a year ago was 17%. God knows what it is now.
It's usury now. It's really legalized usury.
Well, but here's the thing, and this started in the early 2000s. Any society, go back 2,000 years, any society that legalizes usury, it is a matter of time before that civilization fails. It's just, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know. Turn it's off axiomatic. Your heat, you'll get cold. It's axiomatic. Yeah. You legalize usury and the society is going to fail. And that's what we did, you know, 20 years ago, as well as running the federal accounts outside the financial management laws. So if you run the financial accounts illegally and you legalize usury, it's simply a matter of time before your society fails.
We got to take a break. This is the O'Meara and Borgeson Show. We'll be right back after these messages.
You should hear what Hervoy Morich is talking about.
The situation in Iran, which seems to be yet another color revolution. They've shut the internet. The usual suspects have their fingerprints all over the place. National Endowment for Democracy and many of these other NGOs. And it's been reported that Secretary of State Blinken said, "We took action today to advance internet freedom and the free flow of information for the Iranian people." And Elon Musk activated his Starlink over Iran, which would allow the U.S. to bypass Iranian censorship and flood Iran with all the propaganda it wants and try to overthrow the Iranian government. So you had Kazakhstan, Pakistan, Iran now going for China and Russia. They're going for the gold. I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, crazy things are going on.
Hervoy Morich on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing. We can build that. Sustainable housing. We can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Don't want the government to know what you're buying? Use cash. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Catherine Austin Fitz talking about apparently the Federal Reserve's latest plans to take land and money away from average folks. Kelly, you had a very interesting question you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to Catherine a little bit, if she doesn't mind, about the recent announcement that the Bank of England is going to be selling bonds. And this apparently was big news. I caught it this morning.
They were buying bonds.
They are buying bonds.
They're buying bonds, not selling bonds. They were buying bonds.
Right, buying bonds. Buying did I say bonds, selling? Right. Did I say selling?
Yes. Yeah, you did.
You said
yeah,
selling.
You did. Sorry. Catherine caught it.
It sounded like buying. Okay. Anyway, buying bonds.
So why is that such a big story?
Why is that a big story to us?
Okay. So the U.S. dollar index was skyrocketing. It looked like a rocket. You know, it'd been trading high, but it was sneaking up. It went all the way up to 114. And in fact, ING came out and said it was going to, you know, essentially it was going to be a straight shot to 120. Now, what does that mean? What that means is all the countries around the world that have borrowed in dollars are, because of the economy, finding it really hard to earn dollars to pay off that debt. And the price of that debt, you know, the price of getting dollars is skyrocketing against their currencies. So they all get put in a bear trap. And it's extremely painful for trade. It's painful for the economy, but it's putting emerging markets in real dangerous territory. So why was the dollar index skyrocketing like that? It was skyrocketing because people were worried that you had real liquidity problems in both the equities and the debt market.
Wait, we just had a sound issue. You're gonna have to
repeat
could
that.
You repeat what you just said?
When you say what I just said, you mean from the break on?
No, just with the equity.
Your last line you were talking.
So when interest rates are going up, the value of bonds are going down and you get real seize up in the bond market, right? Because the bond prices are falling and investors don't want to buy. So you have a liquidity issue. So what happened when that happens, people are selling bonds and going to cash, and that's driving the dollar up because they want to park their money in cash. Anyway, So the rising U.S. dollar index was an indication of real trouble in the bond market. And the Bank of England stepped in. As soon as they did, we saw the dollar, you know, now the dollar's plummeting. Last I looked, it was back at 110. But, you know, it kind of went like a space shuttle and turned down, you know, like this. Right. Well, these kind of swings in the currency market, if you're trading currencies, this is painful. These are big swings. But what it says is the market's very centralized and people are very concerned about liquidity. Now, why are they concerned about liquidity in the bond market? It's really simple. When you issue far more bonds than you can possibly pay back, guess what? You have trouble keeping the bubble floating. If you've ever seen, there's a great movie, Margin Call, that came out after the financial crisis. And there's a wonderful scene where a trader is driving another trader across the Brooklyn Bridge. And he's explaining about why they deserve to be paid so much, because they're keeping all this phony baloney paper, you know, floating in the air. And if you look at the bond market, you know, there are far more bonds outstanding than there are sort of economic capacity to pay the debt service. You know, so we have the whole planet is in a giant debt entrapment. And of course, as I said, there are two ways out of this. We can inflate our way out by lowering the value of the currency. I mean, you pay off the bonds by printing the money, right? But then,
well, do you think another way is just to one day announce that, you know, this is the end of paper currencies and everything, and now everything's going to be cryptocurrency, and we start all over?
Cryptocurrency. Okay, so get this clear.
I mean, central banks are going to do everything in crypto, right? And get rid of cash.
But digital dollars are fiat currency with bank deposit insurance. Crypto is just fiat currency with no bank deposit insurance.
Right. Right.
Okay. That's all, you know, there's no difference. It's all funny money. Now, you know, I agree with the Bitcoin guys that there's a limitation on how much they can print as opposed to some of the others, but it's all fiat currency. The problem we have is here we have real assets and here we have, you know, financial paper. And the reality is we're not building and making more financial assets. Instead, we have a group of lawless people, if anything, are destroying a lot of financial assets, like blowing up pipelines, right? So, you know, we either get productive and start creating more real assets and taking better care of our real assets, or there's no way out of this. It's so simple. It's, you know, this is a seven, you know, your 7 year old can understand this because it's simple.
So let's say they don't care. They're going to keep doing this until they've raped everything and there's nothing left and everything collapses. Then what do we have? What kind of a system do we get?
So you get, I mean, where this is going, if it's allowed to continue, is it's going to significant depopulation, much greater automation and complete central control. And the people left alive will essentially be slaves.
That's the central bank digital currency model. I think that's why they're doing all this. I think that's why they're trying to take everything. And they're coming up with these, you know, this thing that we were talking about today, the, you know, the climate related financial risk exercise.
What you've been doing through the BIS and the international organizations is creating a whole parallel civilization, which is not subject to national laws or laws of sovereignty. And as you've been stealing more and more money and putting it in that system, and that system has become more and more lawless, the question is, okay, you now have two systems, one which is sort of above the law and engaged in criminality in a way that's unbelievably profitable, and another system that's, you know, that's basically not able to continue on the basis that it's in. And so the question is, you know, do you collapse and wipe out, you know, the traditional system and move the rest of the assets into the parallel, you know, the breakaway civilization? I mean, think of this. Some of us have been calling sort of the BIS system the breakaway civilization. And I said the pandemic was when the breakaway civilization broke back in. So, you know, you move all the money out and then you break back in and you start taking control. So I think the question for all of us is, are we going to help them tear down our sovereign governments? Or are we going to take back our sovereign governments and do everything we can to protect sovereignty?
I guess my question too is, you tell us, listen, operate in cash, use cash, use the small banks, so on. But what happens if one day the Federal Reserve announces we're not doing cash anymore? Is my cash going to be worth anything at that point?
Traditionally, when a central bank converts cash or cancels cash, you have a period of time when you can convert. But what I will tell you is, either we create our own currencies or we work with our state legislators to create state systems. Because remember, in the Constitution, we can use gold and silver, you know, with state and state depositories and state banks. We don't need the feds. So, you know, I mean, here's my problem, Christine. The question is, when you say, what will I have to do? You know, this is a war. Somebody's trying to kill you. And so we either organize and win the war or it's over.
And, Catherine, I have a question real
and
quick.
You can't win the war if you're using your enemy's currency, right?
Right. No, agreed. Right. But I guess I'm thinking that the average citizen, they're not even thinking about this right now, really. Do you think? They're not thinking, gee, I got to get rid of my Citibank card.
My life is full of thousands and thousands of people who are thinking about this every day and have been for years. I think there are a lot of people thinking about it. They're just not, you know, they're real careful who they talk to.
So, Catherine, I'm curious, during the Great Depression, when the financial system imploded, when there was the bank runs, was the money FDIC insured then? I don't think so. I don't think they had that then, did they?
No, FDIC.
They didn't. So remember, in the Great Depression, there are 3,100 counties in America. And at the height of the Great Depression, there were 3,100 local currencies.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yep.
After the implosion.
At the height of the Great Depression, there were 3,100 local currencies
that have been created.
I believe the reason that have been created locally, and I believe the reason they came out with the whole WPA effort and Franklin Roosevelt is they wanted to wipe that out.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. When you say how local, are you saying like each different towns had their own currency or different counties?
So
different
all states? I can tell you is there were 3,100 currencies, and there just happened to be 3,100 counties in America.
And that wreaks havoc on control by the feds because that's what we had. That's what we had before we had the treasury. I mean, every state, had their own currency, and it was screwy. They couldn't do anything.
One of my favorite reforms that I keep recommending, and this comes not from me, but Bill Binney, is he said every homeschooler in America should teach their kids encryption. He said if we had thousands of constantly changing homegrown encryption systems, he said they couldn't deal with it. It'd drive them crazy.
Oh, my God. That's brilliant.
Isn't that brilliant?
Oh,
Bill Binney's
God,
a brilliant man.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, I know that. I know that. Wow.
Catherine, I'm just going to pull this out because I think you and I spoke about this years ago. And you said we need to cut out the middleman, when it comes to the Fed. And you said, well, think about how much money the federal government, could raise if instead of, the Fed lending money to Wells Fargo and Bank of America, and then they turn around and lend it to us on a credit card, at 18%.
Right.
Why don't we just have, a Visa and MasterCard of the United States? And the United States government, they could charge 7% interest on that credit card.
They could charge less.
Let me finish. And so we'd be taking in all that interest, right?
Right.
Isn't that, I think you're the one that kind of brought that up to me.
There's no, there's absolutely no reason we need a group of bankers running a secret system to provide our currency. We can do it without them. It's totally unnecessary. The only reason why it's necessary is if you want to run a huge secret bubble, in terms of secret operations, the New York Fed and the New York Fed member banks are very, very helpful in terms of running major secret operations, particularly secret operations outside the law that manage large, highly liquid bubbles. If you want to issue far more debt than there are real assets to support debt, secrecy is very helpful.
Yeah, it's absolutely imperative.
Right.
Oh, my God. So, all right, this has got to be happening faster and faster than, going to the cash, to state banks,
So we did an interview, Pete Kennedy and I did an interview about a month ago. It's on Solaria, it's public. Called You're Stronger Than You Think You Are with Pete Kennedy. And it's basically, we go through, whether it's finance or food, all the different things that state legislators can do to create the conditions of sovereignty at the state and local level. And there's a tremendous amount state legislators can do. And, all of these problems are fixable. Our problem is we have a secret governance system. It's invisible. We don't understand how it works. And it's engaged in significant behavior and action outside the law. So, here's the reality. Financial systems are a function of law. All financial assets are, created by contract and created by law. If you have a group of people engaged in massive organized crime who are functioning outside the law, then there are no solutions until you deal with that.
So,
how long, Kelly,
is it that Congress has never question the existence?
Because they get a piece of the action. And the American people have supported the Congress not doing anything because they get a piece of the action. Go back and watch the Red Button story.
Yeah.
Everybody got a check and the crime worked for them as long as they got a piece of the action. Right?
Wow. Yeah. Well, wow. It's not working for them now.
Well, yeah, but and that's the problem. Once you let the criminals get away with, 30, 40, 50 years of organized crime, they've got the bit in their teeth. So,
but
we've had the ability to stop this all the way along. And,
I hate to. They keep throwing new things at us. They keep throwing new things at us, like they did today with this story that we're talking about, this bank lending and management risk for the climate
control. Yeah.
So look, Catherine, we're going to have to take a break right now. And we want to thank you for coming on. As always, you are our financial guru at the last minute. Thank you so much. And we'll see you again real soon.
Okay. Have a great day, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, take Catherine. Care.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I spy with my little eye the European weeklies. Just came in here at weatherbell.com, and they're very interesting looking. A lot of rain for northern Australia and eastern Australia coming up over the next 5 to 6 weeks. Got the La Nina cranking. We've got what we call a cold Indian Ocean dipole. And that tries to jam a lot of upward motion into Southeast Asia, into Northern Australia, so we get a lot of rain over there. Meanwhile, let's take a look at temperatures across the globe. They're upside down again. Very mild along the north shore of Siberia all the way into Northern Canada. But from China to Africa, much of Australia, South America, in other words, the places where the weather's supposed to be warmest, it's cooler relative to averages over the next several weeks. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Lowe, long jump gold medalist and world record holder. When I was 15, I was waiting to catch my train. In a split second, my life changed. As the train arrived, the crowd surged forward. I was too close to the platform edge, lost my balance, and fell into the path of the oncoming train. I was in a coma for 2 weeks, and it took 2 years to walk again. So please, stand back, look up, and stay rail safe.
When you listen to us, you're always guaranteed straightforward, easy to understand, coherent conversation.
So I've made it a priority in my entire career to work closely with you from the time I got to the Senate 180 years ago.
And we stand by those words.
But I made very clear to Putin that we're not going to seek So the best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you, that you like to be able to... Anyway.
Oh, man. Just stop talking.
TNT.
Hi, welcome back to the O'Mara and Porcherson
show.
It was my turn.
All right. It was so funny because we were listening to that last ad, which is a perfect intro to this segment. Go ahead.
Perfect. So we're going to change gears a little bit. Now we're going to talk about something that, for some reason, nobody wants to discuss. So just about on every level, you know, the world appears to be kind of on DEFCON 3. Days ago, the Hermit Kingdom, North Korea, fired a ballistic missile over Japan, forcing the Japanese government to issue this very rare alert to take shelter. The war in Ukraine has escalated, to industrial sabotage, and the world now is teetering on the brink of nuclear Armageddon. More personally, Europeans are staring into the face of, becoming a frozen wasteland this winter, while here in the U.S. and across the pond, families are being decimated with ever-increasing interest rates, high food and energy costs. While all these facts are terrifying, one can't help but admit that the scariest part of all of these dire situations is that the leader of the free world, President Joe Biden, appears to be increasingly suffering from cognitive impairments. Let's be honest, if average Americans see that the president's mental capacity appears to be markedly changed, then so do our enemies. And one can't help but wonder if much of what is occurring in the world today is merely the result of taking advantage of a weak president. But the biggest question then becomes, who's actually driving the bus? Almost from the beginning, then candidate Joe Biden had difficulties remembering one of the most famous lines from the Declaration of Independence.
America to get back up on its feet and once again fight for the proposition that we hold these truths to be self-evident. Sounds corny. Not a joke. Think about it. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by go, you know the thing.
While one is sympathetic with the gap,
you know the thing.
You also have to acknowledge that most eighth graders would at least get that one line correct. So, I mean, needless to say, there is ample video and audio material to reflect the president's cognitive decline, including numerous times he's been filmed trying to shake hands with, you know, people who aren't even on a stage with him. And we have to wonder, you know, is there something more going on here? So more importantly, what we need to do is ask ourselves, is the president suffering from some form of dementia, and are his cognitive abilities impaired? And who actually is running this country? Christina, do you know?
First of all, I want to say something. And that is that before we thought this segment was so important because things are really getting scary out there. And almost every other day, Biden is doing something that is clearly indicating, you know, things aren't firing on all pistons up there in his head. And we tried to call a lot of people to come on this show, a lot of neurologists, to talk about what it looks like to them, you know, whether it looks like he is in cognitive decline or whatever. And, you know, we couldn't get anybody to come and talk to us. I mean, there are a few people who have spoken to bigger outlets. Maybe it's because we're not big enough. I don't know. But this is a super serious issue that really needs more
Well, it's extremely, it is extremely important. You know, Alex, our producer, Alex, I'm going to ask you to play clip two. Could you go ahead and do that for us?
I want to thank all of you here, for including bipartisan elected officials like Representative Governor, Senator Braun, Senator Booker, Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? I didn't think she was going to be here.
So, Christina, you know this clip, and this just happened a week ago. I mean, this is a clip where the president is literally asking for a woman, a former congresswoman who was in a terrible car accident in August. She's deceased. He even had flags flown at half staff for her right after her death. But he's asking her if she's in the audience. I mean, this is terribly concerning because it didn't happen that long ago. And certainly you would think that his staff would have prepared him and told him, you know, hey, you know, don't ask for Jackie. You know, she's no longer with us, right? This is important. It's just, it's something that you go, okay, we are really in dire straits right now in the world on so many levels, economically, you know, we're on war footing. This whole Ukraine-Russian thing just keeps escalating. And people are really feeling, you know, the financial crunch, you know, in their pocketbook. And here we have a president who you go, you know, this guy runs the free world. Why does he not have a cognitive test? And, you know, I think you're going to talk about Congress. Congress has asked this two times, right?
Yes, they have. And they wrote a letter that was signed, right, by
38 members of Congress.
Was it 38 members? Were they all Republicans? I mean, no, I'm just curious if.
No, there were some Democrats on it too. So it's like they see that there's a problem too, just like normal Americans who watch the news and they see these gaffes or they see him stand on a stage and turn around.
And what does Biden's physician say? I mean,
to my knowledge, they haven't really addressed this. Whenever this comes up, there's really no answer. Oh, you know, Biden will say, well, look at me, watch me. Well, we are.
Well, we have.
And that's why we're asking these questions. You know what I mean? So, and then, you know, you have a situation where when the White House, you know, is asked, okay, they just make up silly responses. But here's the other question. You know, we're sort of running out of time. We ran long with Catherine. But if Biden were to have some kind of cognitive issue and it couldn't be treated or whatever, we hope it would be. Kamala Harris is, you know, his backup man, woman. Okay.
She's the heartbeat away from the presidency.
Exactly. So, you know, It seems that she has a few gaffes, too.
The United States shares a very important relationship, which is an alliance with the Republic of North Korea. And it is an alliance that is strong and enduring.
God, she must be hiding under the bed today after the shooting of this missile across the pit. She must be hiding under her bed. I mean,
Number two. This is number two. The number two, leader of the free world is saying that we're best friends with North Korea. I mean, this is really, really dire straits when you think about it. It's one thing to have a gaffe. It's another thing that, we don't think she has a cognitive issue, but maybe she's not so bright. I don't know. I mean, to say something like that, I mean, what did that send to our friends, in South Korea? What did that say to them? Again, we're putting out these signals all over the world that we're a bunch of incompetents. We don't know who our friends are.
Well, it's worse than that. It's worse than that. I mean, okay, Kamala Harris has, I remember when she went to the border, and actually she didn't go to the border. She was going to deal with the border situation by going down and talking to ostensibly the leaders or various people of various leaders of the countries from where these people were coming. And meanwhile, Border Patrol guys and all the people who were dealing with this massive influx of people every day were saying, hey, the problem's over here. Here's where the problem is, not over there in the fancy, in the fancy offices of the people who,
leaders
of the nations of these people.
Her smart aleck response when she was questioned why she hadn't been to the border, she says, well, I haven't been to Europe either. I mean, what? Is that a response?
She makes no sense. I mean, he sounds like he has dementia. He does. I mean, first of all, sometimes you'll see him kind of shuffle around up there on the stage.
Yeah, he definitely has a gait. He's got like a gait.
Like he's not. And then, of course, he can't. He can't find his words.
And again, this could be attributed to old age. And certainly after 65, they say that, everybody can get this, these things. But this is happening more and more, and it's becoming a little more egregious.
Some of the people who are stepping into the power void, Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
This is what you say. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, the point is who is driving the bus? Okay. If the president has these cognitive issues, then you have to say, okay, who's driving the bus? Because right now the bus isn't being driven very well, given what is happening in the world.
Well, and here in this country, but let's look at all our billions of dollars that are going over there in Ukraine and this pipeline that was blown up that, by the way, the U.S., when there was the U.N. gathering to talk about it, the U.S. would not confirm or deny, let's put it that way, that they had blown up that pipeline. Now,
we've seen. I mean, it's all over the news. I mean, everybody pretty much assumes the U.S. did it.
It's kind of a given. But, by doing this, they've really screwed the Germans. They've totally screwed the Germans, who are supposed to be our allies. And I'm sure the whole EU is looking at this and thinking and not having warm, fuzzy feelings. And it's interesting because Pepe Escobar wrote what I thought was a pretty brilliant article. And in one section, which he calls the attack of the Straussians, I think he's got it right. Antony Blinken, he's part of the Straussian group.
Yes.
That's the neocons holding hands with a few neoliberals like, they call
Victoria
them neoliberals.
Newland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Victoria. Oh, yeah. Victoria mm-hmm. F the EU Newland. Mm-hmm. OK, remember when she said F the EU. So we know these people are all about U.S. supremacy, U.S. hegemony. and they're not really interested in the diplomatic route. A lot of money, billions of dollars have been sent over to Ukraine. Prices are up, you know, prices everywhere. Have gone through the roof, gas gone through the roof, blamed on Ukraine. So the people driving the bus in the foreign policy department are the people who, you know, they sent us to the war in Iraq. Okay. Mm-hmm. They sent us into Afghanistan. So do we really like these people? Do we really want these people to have free reign because Mr. President's marbles are not, you know, Mr. President is not firing on all pistons?
Right. And again, it gets even worse than that, because when the White House is confronted with questions about the president's cognitive abilities, they come up with these outlandish excuses. In fact, they double down to, you know, on the everything is fine mantra.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can spit that out all you want. And of course, you know, the press is no better, because the press is not addressing, you know, the mainstream press.
Right and left. They all were in the White House press room that day, and they all were asking, you know, Karine Jean-Pierre to, you know, explain, you know, what happened with Biden. And, you know, she came up with this. Well, it was on the top of his mind, on the top of his mind.
I'm like, Alex should play that clip. We should have Alex.
In the Hunger event today, the president appeared to look around the room for an audience member, a member of Congress who passed away last month. He seemed to indicate she might be in the room. What happened?
So the president was, as you all know, you guys were watching today's event, a very important event on food insecurity. The president was naming the congressional champions on this issue and was acknowledging her incredible work.
He said, Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? She must not be here.
No, I totally understand. I just explained she was on top of mind.
She was on top of mind. Okay. That's their response.
Karine is Haitian. She's Haitian. And I come from French. Haiti. And this is she's from Haiti. I'm going to say this to her in Creole. What bêtise? What bêtise? That's what she's doing. She'll understand.
I mean, look.
She's joking. She's joking.
You can't get the White House to acknowledge.
Means you're joking around and screwing up at the same time in Creole.
But don't you think the American people, they can handle the truth? I've always said this from a million years ago. If you just tell us the truth, we may be angry, but we can accept it. Tell us the truth. That was the lamest response.
The American people have been verbally abused and orally, meaning hearing, okay, AU. Mm-hmm. R-A-L-O-Y, however you spell it, for decades. I mean, when Bush was in power, the lying and the propaganda that went on that forced us into Afghanistan and then Iraq, I mean, it was astounding. It was astounding. But now, and you know, he was not, it was interesting because he was another one who, I mean, he was very squirrely, very often when he was talking, but no one ever said, you know, he just seemed to be a squirrely guy, sort of a la Kamala, not someone with dementia. It's a different, the nature of the defective speech and so on is very different, you know?
Yes. Yes. And again, this isn't saying that, you know,
I don't know, these presidents that we're getting, these presidents, they're like a giant FU to the American people. I mean, it's terrible. It's terrible. Bush didn't give a damn when he'd say anything he wanted to, you know, basically.
Nah, but he didn't talk. He didn't ask for, you know, deceased people to respond from an audience. So, I mean,
I'll never forget when he made fun of looking for bin Laden, or what was it that he was looking for? He was making a speech. Oh, I don't know. Where is he? Is he over here? Is he over there? And he was making fun about it. You know, I don't know where he is, you know, and meanwhile, people died behind that stuff, you know? So I don't know. He was just as rude, I'd say. Look,
I don't know. I think it's time to have a conversation. Okay. It's time to have a conversation.
And I think it's time the neurologists come out en masse and talk about this, because we need somebody to stand up and say, hey, this guy needs an exam.
Yes.
He needs an exam. That's what we're saying. I mean, we're done for the day. This was our official rant today. The Joe Biden needs a medical exam.
The necessary rant.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, Mr. Biden.
Hey, Trump had one and he passed it.
Trump had one. Yeah.
Let's see how he does.
They accused him of being off the wall and said he had to have one, and he took one. I mean,
and he passed it.
Let's face it.